Welcome, and thanks for tuning in. You must be pondering some fantasy sports questions. Well, good news, because you just turned into another episode of Keepers, Sleepers, and Creepers with John and Paul. And here we are, John, with our first in-season NFL fantasy podcast.
Yes, it is. It was a surprisingly exciting week. Like, All the teams I thought that were going to be horrendous played pretty dang well.
Yeah, after that first game, which was not exciting, it rebounded.
Agreed. I was expecting very rough, a lot of blowouts, and there were blowouts, don't get me wrong. I did see the scoreline for Baltimore-Miami. Thankfully, that was not on TV.
Right.
But, you know, most of them were pretty competitive. Like, Washington being in the game, Cincinnati being in the game, those are two of the worst, I think, spreads for the money lines and stuff.
And they're good games.
And they were close. Competitive.
And we're forced to watch both of them without our NFL ticket. So.
Yeah. Sad life.
It was good games, though. It was fun. So let's talk about what the people want to hear, and that's how excited we are for our fantasy baseball playoffs. They started this week, and next week, me and you are both on byes in our head-to-head league, so we get to actually start playing. So, again, man, it was a good fantasy baseball season. Tons of great info. I'm super pumped to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it'd be cool to take home two championships this year out of two, but we'll see.
Way more vested in those leagues, but we love fantasy football, and that's what we're really here to talk about tonight.
Yes.
We don't want to talk about baseball and get everybody mad at us. So
I think I can feel the eyes rolling.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll be able to get into the
which wasn't intentional. We want the eyes to roll.
If you've listened to us for any period of time, you know that that's kind of our thing.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Keepers, Sleepers, and Creepers. You've tuned into an episode where we're going to break it down midweek for you guys before the football games get around and to kind of beat the rush of all the other information out there. We'll be dropping Tuesday night this whole season for you. Keepers, let's break down the name of the podcast, KSC Podcast, if you want to follow us. So keepers are people that believe in their stat line, or if they had a poor stat line, they'll rebound. And we're going to give you a little bit of faith in those players and just kind of highlight some of those people. Sleepers, people that aren't really owned to the percent that you know, makes them owned in all leagues, so you got a good chance of going out there snagging them. We believe in these people. They're going to be also, we're going to group in our studs from our studs and duds section that we did last year and just kind of pocket into sleepers to make it a more interesting and flowing cast. And then creepers being people that had way too good of a stat line or that had a poor stat line and confirms our feelings on that player. So two positives and a negative.
Yeah.
We like to keep our podcast a little bit unbalanced to the positive side.
I think so. I mean, because in general, it's hard to deal with creepers. Like, at some point, if you invest high with a pick, It's hard to cut them, even if they're going to underperform at some point.
Right.
If you're taking a first through a fourth round pick, hopefully they're at least rosterable, or else you're in miserable shape.
Right.
So talking too much about them might be a little bit detrimental.
For sure. And we'll also bring back fantasy foresights.
Yeah.
And then this year, by Joe, we're going to actually revisit the fantasy foresights. I never think we did on last season. We'll at least recap and see how right or wrong we were.
At least from the last week, yeah.
Just from the last week, yeah. We won't do a season long. That was a headache. We tried, and it was like, what? No.
It got too much. I let it build up.
We're not ESPN.
We have 400 questions we've asked. What's the score?
Yeah, we're not ESPN. We don't have somebody keeping that for us, so. Especially while we're balancing baseball and basketball, too. So,
yeah.
All right, then we'll just stick true to our name, KSC Podcast. So we're going to start with the K, which is the keepers. And you got to feel good about having people's names that we mentioned here. So, John, who's the first keeper you got?
I think the big one is the one in everybody's minds. And I want to get this out of the way. He was not a person I had a lot of faith in coming into the season, but Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
He's owned in 91% of leagues.
Yeah.
But to me, his level of production was so staggering in week one. I know there was other situations that really helped him, mostly the Tyreek Hill injury more than anything. But he played so extremely well. He had 11 targets, 9 catches, 198 yards, and 3 touchdowns. That is a studly week-winning sort of game there. And Hill is looking like he was substantially injured. From what you were talking about, and we were both talking about, the injury sending him to the hospital was...
And then from the ortho unit to the trauma unit.
And although who knows how long the recovery will be for a football player in an effective, highest quality rehab center for his own team, it could be kind of quick. But my gut is telling me that doesn't sound very good. So there's a chance that Sammy Watkins may be the number one wide receiver in one of the best passing offenses in the National Football League for the next few weeks. So, and that was against a tough Jacksonville defense last week.
Right.
I don't know what's not to like with him going forward. Definitely a player with a high ceiling. The only thing I find a risk for him is injury. It's been a concern most of his career.
Right.
But for at least a few weeks, he's certainly a keeper while Tyreek Hill's hurt. And he probably has season-long value as long as he can stay on the field because he is clearly involved in this offense and they're not running it as much as they did previously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo what you said 100%. Sammy Watkins has always been a talented wide receiver, making things happen with not the most ideal passing quarterbacks ever in Buffalo.
Very true.
Limited by his foot injury, which... is notable because those re-injure often, and it's been sore even as late as last season. Then he's got to take some time sitting down. However, though, very talented wide receiver. I think when it comes to talent, not just gifted abilities like insane speed that Hill has, I think he's a better wide receiver than Hill. He's not as fast as Hill, so, and that meshes really well with Mahomes, but what have you. Anyways, you know, last baseball season when I'm like, yeah, Giancarlo Stanton, this season, I'm telling you, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
And I'm getting those same vibes from Hill. I don't know if it's a true vibe that I think he's going to be, you know, this injury doesn't recover. Because I've heard crazy things about this injury, and also it's the majority is like 2 to 3 weeks, but it, how good is he going to be even when he comes back from that? And then... you hear the negative off-season reports, too. It just sounds like this is going to be, like, kind of year for Tyreek Hill.
There's substantial risk with Tyreek Hill. I mean, and that was from the moment he entered the league. His draft stock fell immensely because of his off-field problems.
Right.
And as I will talk about today, and I will continue to talk about again, small little receivers do not typically translate well in my book to being a reliable fantasy asset.
Yeah. I mean, even last year, he does have the games he blows up.
Yes.
And he completely earns his draft stock, but... he also has the games where it's like...
it can be very vanilla. And I mean, his floor was higher than I ever thought would be even possible last season. And I think it's unlikely Mahomes plays at the MVP world beater level that he did the entire last season.
Got like a start, but I agree.
But yes. Is he going to probably be quarterback one by the end of the year? I think, yeah, probably. That's where my money would be on right now. But regression is probable. And so, like you said, Tyreek Hill is a guy that I think might struggle to repeat as well.
So if Watkins stays healthy, 198 yards and 3 touchdowns, probably not that legit, but he's going to be very good. So he's definitely worth a waiver claim if your league's that shallow, and if you have him, keep him.
Yeah, he's a wideout one while Hill's hurt.
Absolutely. Don't let somebody pry him away from you and you overthink it.
Yeah.
Well, then while I got the floor and I'm speaking here, I'm going to echo... to pretty much a huge theme that we had all last season for our podcast. And you know who I'm talking about. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I do.
Who is it?
Mr. D.H. Derrick Henry.
Yeah. So they figured it out.
They did.
You know, at the end of last season.
They did.
And
they saw the truth in the light.
For a guy that big, he's a freak. I mean, he's just insane. He's so gifted.
Mm-hmm.
And... they're like, well, we're going to run the offense through. And then people on the offseason are like, it's not going to work because he's actually not good. And then it's like, what? And he's actually even an underrated pass catcher. Not saying that you're going to expect a 75-yard breakaway touchdown on a reception every single time.
Fully agreed.
But he is not eliminated from those passing downs. It's just Marcus Mariota isn't a guy that really feeds the scat back. So
even when Deion Lewis is in.
Even when Deion Lewis is in. So... 19 touches for 80, well, 19 carries for 84 yards and a touchdown, plus another touchdown receiving. Derrick Henry is, he's about safe as an RB2 to RB1 every week.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Because Tennessee's defense is no joke, and the game, he's never going to get game flowed out, period.
That is all I see. Even if he does get game flowed out, the Tennessee Titans are going to be so ineffective, they're going to want to hand him the ball anyway. Yeah.
They're not going to bring in Deion Lewis because...
they're not spreading it five wide. They're not running Deion Lewis only for passing downs because he's not even that good at that.
Right.
So I completely agree with you. Derrick Henry has one of the highest floors at running back. PPR leagues, he will suffer in comparison to the elite tier.
Right.
But to be fair, like you said, he's not completely unavoided there, and he's going to get touchdowns for days in this offense. He's going to get carries for days. And his yards per carry have been very good when he's been given the ball consistently since last year. And if we're talking about this week, he's playing against Indianapolis, which played horrendous last week against two replacement-level Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson, who I like both, but also... You had 96 yards receiving from Austin Eckler, but Justin Jackson had over 10 yards, or just about 10 yards a carry. I think just a little over 9 for 6 carries for 57 yards. He's a classic bruiser-style running back, but that equals high floor and touchdown explosion games.
Well, I mean, you transitioned me right into the next name I want to talk about. Sorry for stealing the floor again.
Go for it.
But Austin Eckler.
Okay, Austin Eckler.
Do you have him as keeper?
I do not.
You don't? Yeah, I mean, it's already Melvin Gordon who... And if you're Melvin Gordon and you're sitting out and you're watching this happen, you know, I had consoled some friends that were like, but he isn't, you know, he can't be replaced. He is too valuable. Like, they'll re-sign him. It's stupid for him to say he can't be replaced. And it's like, if you watch Melvin Gordon, talented running back.
Sure.
He's never been able to run in between the tackles, in my opinion. For an efficient yards per carry, that's where I go by.
Yeah, his efficiency has always been pretty low for a top-tier running back.
Right. But very good at catching the ball and busting it outside. He's got good speed, but anybody can with the Chargers, and they prove it game in, game out. And Austin Eckler did it all last season. And with as wrong as Melvin Gordon kind of did the Chargers in a way, in my opinion, I doubt they even give the job right back to Gordon after games like this from Eckler when he does come back 6-8, because it wasn't the easiest matchup on paper before they blew the Colts out of the water on the ground. And,
right.
I mean, it just looked so good. 12 for 58 with a touchdown, and then 6 out of 7 targets and 96 yards and 2 touchdowns for Eckler. I just think you're going to see more of that. He's a keeper, and I'm scared if Gordon comes back in week 6-8, but I'm also thinking that this just may be a really bad year for Melvin Gordon.
I think that's the biggest takeaway for me. Austin Eckler clearly has legit value and should be tried. You have to find a way to get him in your lineup while Melvin Gordon's not playing, because he's the guy that's matchup proof, because he can catch the ball out of the backfield and will get rushing carries in the offense as well. Justin Jackson will probably be used more, I would think, in the carries department for just ground stuff. But
well, that's where he's
going to
be used.
Yes.
Sure.
But Eckler's playing time is going to be excellent. And he's the guy that I think is the back to own of the two. So I'm with you there. But I'll go with one of my keepers. It's going to be George Kittle. So I'm going with the San Francisco tight end. This week he had 10 targets for 8 catches for 54 yards against Tampa Bay. That is clearly a disappointment. But what I'm telling you is don't panic, because I think he has a big game against the Bengals this week. The Bengals defense was really interesting because they played so horrendous last year, because I think they were playing without a defensive coordinator for the second half of the season and had the worst defense I've ever heard in the history of the NFL bad for the first 6 weeks or so under their defensive coordinator. That is the same returning unit from last year. There was almost no additions made. It was just addition by subtraction, getting rid of Burfict from the defense. Then this last week against San Francisco, they played a 5-2 defense against Seattle for the majority of the game. Mostly that was based on game flow, and they're talking about that won't be the same case.
Right.
But their weak linebacking core and Sean Williams being a run-stopping, not a coverage safety, means I don't know who's going to match up with Kittle in this next week. To me, it looks like they're probably going to stuff the run if that's the same defense they're going to try to roll out against Garoppolo and the gang. But Kittle is the guy to own, period. In this week, I think he's the number one tight end this week, and that includes Kelsey, which is insane to say with Hill injured. I like them both, but I think Kittle edges him out.
Yeah, the hype for Jimmy G is all gone. That's the biggest concern. I think Kittle's the most talented receiver, and also he's the favorite target of every quarterback that plays in San Francisco. But Jimmy G's looked bad, and every report since preseason's been bad. And I remember back when he first got traded to San Francisco, me and you were like looking at each other like, well, it's 6 games, and sample size is so huge. Like, I don't even know if it was 6 games. I think it was close to 6 games, but everybody's like, he's amazing.
QB1 in the fantasy drafts, and everyone's like, I'm intrigued, but temper your expectations, and then torn ACL, and I mean, that's really unfortunate,
right.
But now he's coming back and playing awful, and you're like, oh no,
I mean,
maybe he wasn't legit.
Right, and that first game, if Winston wasn't so bad, then maybe we're looking at Garoppolo is pretty bad, too.
I agree. I'm not thrilled with Garoppolo, and I was intrigued by him coming into the preseason. Not enough to invest a draft pick in any of my leagues for him, especially as a late guy. I'm very concerned. I think there's a chance he could turn it around, and maybe the ACL and being away from a year is making him slow on the return. I think that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Kittle is good enough in this particular matchup this week to get by, even with Garoppolo playing as badly as he is. I don't see him possibly being underneath 80 yards, and I think he's likely to have a touchdown as well.
No, I dig you. Because replacement-level quarterbacks, like they did last season, can make Kittle work. And even Kittle was heavily targeted that game. It just...
Yeah.
That was just mainly a side note. Like,
but you're right.
Jimmy G's... right.
I don't know if I felt so extreme.
What was that other dude that came out of New England that kind of ran a little bit well, and then...
We're talking about Matt Cassel? Yeah. Like, the guy that literally just played one good year for them, and is still a backup somewhere, probably, after all those years.
I doubt now.
Coasting for, like, a decade on 1 6-8-game stretch.
But, I mean, I'm not going to compare him right now, but I've always kind of felt that way a little bit. I don't know.
New England backups typically don't translate particularly well.
No. It's just New England. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to throw out my last keeper then for you. I'll see what you got. But,
sure.
You know, in these first ones, we try not to rotate names and re-mention so many people. So this first week's kind of biased to who we own and who we liked on the offseason. And I get to shout out, just like in the preview, Leonard Fournette looked awesome.
Yeah, he did look pretty good.
Not only did he report as much thinner, 20 pounds down, but he looked thinner and explosive instead of just kind of like this oafy type running back. And when you hear low body injuries, the injuries that you're scared of for him, losing that weight is huge.
Yeah.
Looked great, 13 for 66. Also, you got to like 6 targets for four receptions. Only 28 yards, but that's okay. I mean, there's no threat to his goal line work, period, in this team. And that was, if there was a game he could get game flowed out of, it was that game with Kansas City.
You're right.
I love him going forward. And Minshew didn't look bad at all coming in on the highlights. And, you know, people are like, please don't bring up his fumble. It was literally his first professional fumble ever. Guy never fumbles, so don't even bother me with that.
Just about everybody. Yeah. Even Ben Jarvis Green Ellis could fumble when he went, like, what was that, 6 years without a fumble?
Right.
And then he fumbled immediately when he got traded. So
I'm looking for healthiness. I'm looking for explosiveness. And, you know, his rookie year was all about just tons of volume, not much quality with that volume. This year it looks like tons of volume. And that's – I'm happy with that stat line. It's not real flashy, you know, no touchdown or anything, and there's tons of running backs to talk about. But low-key, watching Leonard Fournette, I saw everything I wanted to see from him with a very good schedule. And that's something I didn't mention with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry and Fournette both have very plus matchup schedules for the rest of the season, which you'd love to see.
That is big time. Yeah, I think Fournette's pretty good. If he can stay healthy, I like him. And losing weight's probably going to help him do that, considering he was real beefy for absorbing a lot of contact because he didn't have any explosiveness. So that might be helping.
He was floating down the bayou. So, all right.
My final keeper is a guy that it's very shaky, but I wanted to talk about him, and I think I'm going to hesitantly put him in keeper, but there are big question marks, and so that's going to be Kerryon Johnson. He had a concerning week one based on primarily his lack of efficiency and his carry distribution. It looked a lot like he was going to be the number one running back in general on the Detroit team and maybe borderline unchallenged with Theo Riddick leaving, so he might have been involved in the pass game. But the passing percentage in this game could have affected his value, which is why I'm a little bit leaning toward possibly giving it a little bit more time to try it out. Don't panic. Don't insta-trade him. Because Arizona's secondary was really beat up. And so no Patrick Peterson was playing, and so they threw extensively, and they were highly successful with it. So the carry split in an overtime game that went all the way through overtime into a tie was 16 and 11 for the two running backs for Detroit for their main two guys. So that was 16 for Kerryon Johnson and 11 for C.J. Anderson. They both translated to a 3.1 yards per carry and a 3.2 yards per carry. So Arizona defended them both pretty well, so it's not necessarily like C.J. Anderson might take his job. And depending on how the rest of these games go, Kerryon Johnson is one of their better pass receiving running backs in their team. So I'm thinking a little more patience with Kerryon Johnson, but that carry distribution is a big red flag, and I would keep a close eye on it. If there's one more week where it splits about 50-50 and his efficiency is not very good, maybe you try to look at jumping ship before it's too late.
See, I'll go ahead and, you know, foreshadow to one of my creepers, because that's where I slotted him. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm really hoping if I own him, he gets one good week here in the next couple weeks, and I can trade him while there's still a little bit of preseason hype about him. But, I mean, the big thing on the preseason was, oh, Kerryon's now going to be a bell cow. Like, everybody's saying that, except Kerryon. Kerryon's like, no, I'm actually not a bell cow running back. So, you got it from his own lips that, hey, I'm not going to be a bell cow. Like, that's not who I am. And then they come out and prove it. And this was his best matchup pretty much season-long, if you look at his matchup calendar, was against Arizona. Because he has, a lot of people say, the toughest. Detroit has the toughest running game matchups season-long. Really tough schedule. And
doesn't help the Chicago and Minnesota in your division.
Absolutely.
And Green Bay looks much improved.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. So you see, you're hoping for bell cow. Kerryon said, no, I'm not a bell cow. And he said, shut up, Kerryon. You are a bell cow. And then CJ Anderson comes in. He's like, I'm going to get 11 carries to your 16, and you're not a bell cow. It's like, okay. So nix that. Tough schedule. And when you get the plus matchup, the one where it's like, well, if he did really good in that one, I can still trust him. He had all the game flow in the world, everything, and he couldn't get it done against Arizona. And Arizona, where they were good against the pass D last year, people ran all over them. You hate to see that when, you, like you said, you got Chicago and Minnesota on that schedule twice, plus Green Bay, who looks a little bit revamped. So I'm looking to dish him. I really am, for something else. Yeah, if he gets a good week. I'm not going to trade him on a low by any means. It's week one. Mm-hmm. But I'm waiting for a big week, and I'm like, oh, here you go.
I don't think I could disagree with you on that. I mean, Kerryon's interesting. If you got a good trade offer for him, I would take it for sure.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, it'll be hard to get one of those right now. But hopefully if he can string together a couple of decent games.
I think a good trade, if you could do it, for sure, would to be Kerryon Johnson for Sony Michel. Because they're both values in the same view, and I think Sony Michel's got a bunch much better season outlook. Not that I'm in love with Sony Michel, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, I think.
I think that'd be good, yeah. Feels fair.
Well, then you're done with your keepers?
I'm done, complete.
What? So we'll wake up our sleepers then.
It sounds like a plan. Want me to start this segment?
Absolutely, I do.
Okay, I'm going to go with one guy that is kind of not really of a sleeper, but it was a guy that he still might be ownable in your leagues, and so I want to talk about him for his next few week outlook, and that's Dak Prescott. He's not a guy I was particularly in love with coming into the season, because I still believe the fact that Dallas will be a run-first team this season, and that's referenced by the fact that that's what they did last year, as well as the fact that they re-signed Ezekiel Elliott before they re-signed Dak Prescott with a new contract. Very few teams are going to be re-signing a running back before they re-sign their franchise quarterback, I'll say, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot ignore the way he played in this last game. It was incredible against the Giants. He had a perfect passer rating. Absolutely killed it. 405 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Gallup looked good and got involved mm-hmm. in the offense. Cooper was involved. And
that's the thing.
Great.
Gallup looked good. Gallup's not going to be that good. I still think he has a breakout season. Not 150-plus yards.
Completely agree.
But Cooper is legit.
Completely like, just legit.
We said that on the podcast last year. He's one of the best route runners in the game. It's crazy that he couldn't make it work in Oakland, or that Oakland couldn't make it work with him, because Carr looked very Carr-like, and Tyrell Williams really took that offense. But Amari Cooper is dealing with corner ones and shredding them. He gets open. Like it.
He's good. And considering Ezekiel Elliott will only take pressure off, reliable offensive line means that Dak will be able to deliver the ball to Cooper consistently.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely with you. I think he's a borderline wideout one most weeks, at least a wideout two in every week, regardless of matchup, just based on mm-hmm. his skill level and the team. But that's what I like the most about Prescott, and this could be translated to Cooper immediately as well. Soft schedule over the next few weeks with Washington, Miami, New Orleans. Whoo, sign me up, baby. So right. If you have Dak Prescott or are able to get a hold of him, he's owned in, I think I said, 83% of leagues. He's available in a couple, but he might be even a good guy to trade for, because I don't think his value is insanely high on the preseason. But I wouldn't give up too much either, because I think once Zeke gets involved with this in the offense again and gets back in shape, he's going to be the real bell cow workhorse, and it's going to limit his ability to throw for 405 yards and four touchdowns going forward. I think he's a reliable guy, but it's just interesting. And I mentioned Gallup. I think he's a good guy to keep an eye on because he's really off a lot of people's radars. But he was a first-round pick, and he's coming into his second year, and that's the recipe I like for wide receivers is get through the rookie year, see what you got. Yeah. I think breakouts are coming more often with these receivers that way. So I think he's a high pick that could turn into a breakout candidate as well going forward.
Yeah, Dak is on top sleeper list too for me when we looked at these names. Yeah, I mean, great week one, but he's actually, I think, a floor plus guy.
Yeah.
He's going to have a good floor, an above average floor, and have weeks where he goes plus. This won't happen much more.
I completely agree.
Zeke's going to take over this offense, but that's okay. Because when your number one guy, I don't want Dak to be your number one guy, and you're like, I'm going to ride Dak all season long. There's so many better matchups week to week.
Yes.
But when your number one guy, the guy, you know, has a bad matchup, he's a great guy to put in there. Because they actually have a pretty decent schedule. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, you know, in the teams you mentioned, you know, even at Washington, he's not my favorite play. But he's that floor. He's got a good floor there. Yeah. There's a lot of people I like more than him at Washington. I think Washington is a little bit underrated. But he's got that floor, and, you know, if you got a really bad matchup, I dig it. Say you got Aaron Rodgers next week.
Yeah.
It's close.
I think it's very close. So Dak Prescott, I like him for a few weeks, but as the season goes along, I think I'll like him less and less. Especially because I just don't think his 6 rushing touchdowns last year is repeatable, considering the amount that he ran total in the year.
But I will say this, that Dallas looks like a very good football team right now.
Yeah, they do. Their defense is pretty decent,
right.
too.
Right.
They're going to be very competitive in every game going forward this year.
The changes they've made on offense with the play calling and everything, watch out for the Cowboys in real life, not just fantasy. Let's move on. I'm going to mention Malcolm Brown. How can we not?
Yeah, you have to.
You know?
Shock of the preseason, or the week one, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, for everybody that drafted Henderson, but...
Yeah. that was the breakout candidate everybody was thinking they were going to see in the sleepers list week one.
I mean, he's going to be a great flex play while Gurley's active.
Yes.
I mean, outside of that, if Gurley goes down, I'm really going to love him.
Yes.
But still at 11 carries and 53 yards and 2 touchdowns, if he doesn't get you those 2 touchdowns, keep that in mind. And it's not like Gurley had a bad game. He was over 100 total yards. Mm-hmm. So... Gurley's going to get some touchdowns. You can't count on Malcolm Brown just soaking in all these random goal line touchdowns with a team that's got Kupp, Woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whoever the other guy is, Cooks.
Yeah, Cooks, yeah.
And then Gurley. So you can't count on those touchdowns every week, but he's a nice flex play, you know?
I completely have him ranked in the same area. It was very encouraging to see him get the backup job because, like I was talking about preseason and what we both mentioned, and you'll probably read on the internet as well, is that this knee issue with Gurley is highly concerning and something to monitor, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So the backup, Henderson, he was going so high in drafts is because they didn't know what his workload would look like for Gurley. Mm-hmm. And it is lower. It's still there.
It's appropriate, though.
Yes, it's managing him the correct way. Mm-hmm. But... Brown being above Henderson on the depth chart means all Henderson owners should, in my opinion, go out and pick up Brown immediately and make that flip-flop. 2 touchdowns, like you said, is fluky, and it's hard to project that. And he's not a guy I'm going to feel really confident about going out and playing, especially and definitely not in a running back 2 or 1 standpoint at all. Don't get me wrong. But I think as an RB4 on your team that you can move into the flex in good matchups,
sure.
I think he's perfect for that.
But if you own Gurley, you're treating this guy as a running back 2 almost, you're going to go out, you need to go out there and make sure you get him on your team if you
from a value standpoint. I completely agree. It's worth wasting your waiver claim this early on in the season to get Brown if you have Gurley.
Yeah.
And if you went after Henderson, because you might lose your handcuff and your backup plan.
Yep. Cool. We're in agreement. Will we be in agreement on the next one? You tell me.
How about Jamison Crowder as a sleeper?
Okay.
What are your feelings on him?
I mean, I didn't hate him coming into the season. You hate that he couldn't get anything done in Washington, but you understand that he couldn't get anything done in Washington.
Completely agree.
I liked him coming into New York because they told him, you're going to keep the slot position. When he kept the slot position, he maintained... So now it's, do you believe in Darnold? Because Anunua is completely useless.
Yeah.
Shouldn't even exist for fantasy purposes. Unless Crowder goes down, but it's much more likely Anunua goes down with an injury. So, yeah. He's going to have a much better floor than Robbie Anderson in this team, I think.
Yeah.
And if you're in a PPR league, then for sure.
Money. That was my big takeaway here. PPR leagues are taking over, and a lot of my leagues haven't jumped full on in that general area, but 17 targets this last week is an absurd number, and he had 14 catches on him. Mm-hmm. They were all short. They were all underneath.
Very Gabriel-like.
Very Gabriel-like. But 99 yards on 14 catches is very, very good in PPR. To put that in perspective, Robbie Anderson
and
had 7 targets.
And that's why full-point PPR shouldn't exist.
It bloats this
Half
guy.
Half-point I'm okay with. Yeah. Full-point, though, 14 points plus 100 yards. So you're telling me he just got you 24 points?
Yes. On dink and dunks all day. Just being the source of the offense.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he caught it. Yeah. That's worth something. But
it's worth something. It's worth 0.5.
But 10 yards for just the catch and the equivalent for yardage? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But Robbie Anderson only had 7 targets and Le'Veon Bell had 9. And then everybody else was under like 4. Mm-hmm. So this guy took over in the offense. And apparently, allegedly, Gase was very unhappy with the play of the receivers for this team. And ended up making some moves and tearing them up, and they fired their kicker. And
you know, if you fire the kicker, the wide receivers automatically respond.
Gase is on a clean house spree, is mostly what I'm talking about. And today they went out and they acquired Demaryius Thomas from New England, of all places.
Doesn't matter.
Which I do agree. Demaryius is pretty washed up. But it's weird that they made that trade with New England. In the division. Kind of just a side note, but kind of weird.
A little bit weird, but New England thinks, hey, we got AB, and then I just saw this notification from my stepbrother sent a text, and I saw it on the phone while we were recording, and apparently there's this big 3 accounts of sexual assault against AB, so it never ends with the guy.
The biggest fool.
He's a pretty smart guy.
He's something.
He's pretty intelligent. So.
Huh, well, that's something.
We'll see. I don't know if there's any truth to it. I didn't get to read the article. I just saw the notification come by. Thanks, Donnie, for keeping us updated. But, yeah.
Yeah, you hate to hear that. But I guess in general, Demaryius Thomas's acquisition could conceivably cut into Crowder's productiveness a bit. But I think it just really puts the rip into Quincy Enunwa more than anything else.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be Crowder, Demaryius, and Robbie Anderson
absolutely
all playing for this team. Robbie Anderson will have really big weeks, and he'll have really low weeks. He's one of those big boomer bust guys. Crowder's the safe floor until Demaryius gets worked in the offense, then we'll see him better. So in a PPR league, I'm looking at a wideout 2 for Crowder for this next week while everything's going the way it is. Probably not in standard leagues. He's more of a, definitely more of a flex guy, but he's a high floor guy. Mm-hmm. I think you can probably play him in most matchups while he's this involved in the offense.
Right, and that's another reason why I liked him coming and getting the slot position, because Sam Darnold loves slot. So,
yeah, just looking at Noonwell last year for a few of those games with 15 targets himself.
Yeah.
Pretty unexciting receiver to get 15 targets.
But let's keep it in the slot, because this next player I'm going to talk about is a sleeper. This is the first year, like, every year, like, the last 3 years, I was like, really? He's rated that high? Like, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. And then this year, it's like, why doesn't anybody like this dude? Like, I don't understand it all, and that's Larry Fitzgerald. So this is, like, the first year I've had him at, I don't know, since I was a wee babe when he was in his 20s. But this year, like, you know, a year removed from an awesome season, last year, nobody in the world could succeed with that play calling in Arizona.
I fully agree.
And you see him plummet all the way down to 100, and everybody's like, well, Christian Kirk's going to take over. Christian Kirk is a slot receiver, period. He's going to be okay on the outside, but until he's in the slot, I don't believe in him. And he won't be in the slot until Larry Fitzgerald's out of the slot. And Larry Fitzgerald looked as good as ever in this game, in that slot. And what you love to see is that he looked great. He keeps his body in great shape. So that's why he hasn't fallen off there. And he hasn't had any big injuries to his lower body. So that's how he's been able to stay competitive, quick, and very effective. But what I really love to see is that when it comes crunch time and this team has to air it out, Kyler Murray had the rapport with him that in crunch time, this ball's going to Larry Fitzgerald. 13 targets, 8 receptions, 113 yards, and a TD. And I would say that's where Rosen failed. If you're going to come into Arizona as a young quarterback, you got a recipe for success, and it's give it to the guy who's just been there for so long, and I like it. And all I needed was one game to show me, is Larry Fitzgerald still a physical freak? And he is. I love him for sleeper.
I have him as a creeper, but I'll echo your final statements, which is you needed one game to see if he was legit. I need a little bit more considering the distribution weightedness of that game. And that was basically that Kyler Murray took three quarters to come on and play well.
Well, he's a rookie. It's his first game.
He is absolutely a rookie. It was his first game.
And I'm not saying play Larry Fitzgerald against Baltimore. I thought I would have had him as a keeper, but he's a sleeper.
Well, that's probably fair. But his target rate was great, which is awesome. Eight catches is great. 113 yards is great. A touchdown is great. And he had two deep ball catches, which is something that was impossible for him to have last season. Right. So it shows more ceiling than what I was giving him credit for this last year. So there are encouraging things, but I have him as a slight creeper in the regards of I'm not really willing to buy into him quite yet, as being more than what his draft value would indicate. I think he's a high floor wide out three, and that's probably where most people have him. And if you play him there, that's probably fine. But I think there is some risk for his ceiling depending on Kyler Murray. And I want to see it like two more weeks before I'm willing to slot him in a more matchup-proof statement. So,
I'm not slotting him into a matchup-proof. He's definitely not that. He's a very matchup-dependent guy, but everybody else is. What I'm saying is he's the better player over Christian Kirk, which makes him, where Christian Kirk was way overvalued.
I fully agree with that completely.
And he's just the better wide receiver to have fantasy-wise. So that's my argument. He's not plug-and-play by any means. Don't play him against Baltimore. That is not a good idea. He's not going to have a good game. Maybe he does, and he surprises me, but I'm not going to play him against Baltimore. I have him in both my leagues. And but at the same time, when they do get easier matchups, he's the guy to play Arizona receiving the ball-wise, outside of David Johnson.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe the difference of opinion is I think David Johnson will be far more involved for them to be successful. And most games aren't going to go full overtime duration with play
100%.
Time as well. No, but I mean, Kirk will get like 30% of the offense, I would think.
No.
Maybe 20 in some games. And I mean, Fitzgerald will have a larger share of that as well. But they just don't have a really big tight end to go to. They don't really have a lot of depth at wide receiver that makes me go, wow. So, I don't know. Fitzgerald's fine. He's fine. I'm just not in love with him.
Interesting take. All right. What else you got?
My keeper is a guy that, or my sleeper, sorry, is a guy that I feel strange talking about him because I have such mixed feelings about him, but I just want to give my take, and I think I'm leaning toward pick him up and you might be able to play him in the flex this week, and that's John Ross. He's a guy that has all the red flags, all of them.
Yeah.
And he is injury prone. He's the small little boomer bust receiver, and all those things will be true. I think he's going to continue to be injured and inconsistent, and his big playability is going to be limited, especially as the season goes along. I think the moment AJ Green gets back and worked into the offense, we see a substantial downtick in his value.
Yeah.
But I think for a plug and play this week, I'm willing to ride this wave a little bit.
Yeah.
He had 12 targets, which is way more than he's ever gotten in the Marvin Lewis era. He had 7 catches, 158 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Most of that was on 2 giant touchdown catches, which is, I think, the way he's going to have to function. He also had a lot of drops, so there's a chance that Andy Dalton may throw to him less, and Tyler Boyd will be better than him going forward, which will limit some of this production. But if Mixon doesn't play this next week, they're going to have to throw to be successful, and that's where I think John Ross is worth riding. Because if he gets that target share, there's a big chance that he's going to have at least one big play, even if it's something like 12 targets, 3 catches for 70 yards, and possibly a touchdown. So I think for a minute, he's useful, but I don't know how long he stays healthy or relevant.
I mean, he's too physically gifted to not be a sleeper. He's just, if he could catch the ball consistently, then we're talking about even higher upside. But
yeah, we would.
It was, actually, I mean, if you watch the game, he had pretty good rapport with Dalton. Dalton went to him continuously, and he was open continuously.
He was very open continuously, and arguably could have had a 200-yard game if he just caught the ball,
yep.
Which is insane to say for a guy like him. it's just a matter of, will he be able to make that lucky jump ball catch again where the defender mistimed his jump and it was just
he
barely
went up top
over
and
it?
Got it. It looked really nice, actually.
Yeah.
He made that like, oh, wow, he's a good receiver. And then he drops the next one. You're like, what?
Yeah. So I think as a player in the league, he's worse than what his fantasy lineup breakdowns might look like. And his floor is low. There's going to be games where he might not be involved at all, especially as the season goes along. But for now, I think he has enough boom potential that I'm willing to risk him in a flex.
Sure. Then I'll go with my last sleeper here, if we're done with Mr. Rossi. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to stick with Oakland, because this guy's name was on my radar before. There's always one player that... What's this show that everybody likes?
Hard Knocks?
Hard Knocks. There's always one player that Hard Knocks turns on, you know? Landry. Who was it for Houston? People went nuts for him.
I don't remember.
Anyways, this is the first year where I was on board with it, and it was Darren Waller. And
I love Waller.
Even before Hard Knocks, I was like, oh man, a converted wide receiver. Horrible, you know, drug issues for him, and I hate that for him, but it sounds like he's really matured past all that. And what you really like about him is that there's no AB. So when I look at this offense, everything underneath to Waller, everything over the top to Tyrell.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like it's going to work decently for him. And I think Darren Waller is going to be active. I think he's a better athlete than Cook.
Oh, I definitely think so.
So now you guarantee him some targets. As long as this dude stays, you know, sober, you got a very nice tight end right there.
He's definitely a tight end one in my book, as long as Antonio Brown's not there and he's on the field.
Right.
I mean, I look at him the same way. Carr is a very good, accurate, underneath quarterback. And if he doesn't have that outlet in Waller, then where is it going to go,
right,
in my opinion? So I'm looking at him, but he's probably a double-digit target guy on the season, or at least eight a game. And considering the way the offense looked better than I expected for Oakland coming into this game, I have to be encouraged with Waller as well.
Absolutely. It's actually a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
So, but here's some things that were maybe fun to watch, or just some things that was creepy to watch. So we're on to our creeper segment.
Yes.
Correct. You didn't have any more sleepers, right?
I did not. Nope. Beautiful. We're good.
Who's your first creeper you got?
Number one creeper for me is a guy that I think actually has a pretty decent outlook for next week, but I think I'm talking season long here. And to me, that's going to be Julian Edelman. I thought his target share was going to propel him higher in the rankings. But now that Antonio Brown will eventually be added to this team.
If he does, because if that report is legitimate, then I think you would even backtrack. But if Antonio Brown doesn't play for the Patriots...
100% I backtrack, if that is the case. But for me, the outlook at this particular point in time...
Right. No, I agree.
...is Edelman's an old receiver... with injury problems a little bit. He gets nicked up a lot because he runs right through the middle and gets hammered all game by people. And Gronk doesn't share that blame anymore or that workload anymore. And then Gordon could take over as a number one receiver just immediately anyway. And then if Brown comes in, then he could be third fiddle in this offense. And he's...
Maybe even fourth fiddle once Brown gets there, because it's going to go probably Gordon, Brown, and then James White.
Yeah,
and
probably.
So
yeah, probably. And so
and Burkhead.
And even Burkhead's there.
Burkhead got so much play.
And the running backs are so deep for New England. To me, they were a run first team coming into this year. I mean, the only thing that might help is they'll throw more because they're gonna have Brown and Gordon running down the field and Edelman might have the place in the middle of the field for it, for all the dump offs, but that's kind of a hard sell to me.
Yeah.
And he has the softest matchup in the world against Miami, so I think you have the ability here to play him one more time. And he shreds Miami underneath.
Yeah.
And then try to trade him away.
I love that plan. I love that plan. But you say they look like a run-first team coming into the season. I say they look like a win-first team. This is the this is the
that's
best.
Really true.
Like, arguably better than the year they about went undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
This team is so complete. And Brady looks as young as ever.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's killing it.
And that offense is so complete through and through.
Yes, good offensive line, deep running back core.
And much younger, so they don't wear out as bad towards the end of the season.
Very
if
true.
Gordon stays sober just like Waller, they're gonna destroy people.
I don't know how you'd ever defend that team.
And their defense is... That's
fine.
What separates them
it's
from
good.
Kansas City, is their defense is a whole world better than Kansas City's.
Yes.
Patriots look tough.
They look so stacked. And I don't know how that offense is really going to shape up and look, but that's the crazy thing is Belichick, from one week to another, might run it 30 times in the right matchup. Mm-hmm. Next week comes out and throws it 50 and just shreds for 550 yards and six touchdowns. I don't know what it's going to look like. I honestly don't. But whatever it is, it's going to work.
Great organization. You can hate them, and I'm not going to say you're wrong in doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of the Patriots, but... And, of course, there's the cheating stuff, too, that they've been caught on, which every NFL team does, guarantee it, to get the advantage.
To some degree. There's no way that it's not happening more often with other people.
But you got to appreciate what they've done, because it's one of the most incredible franchise runs of just dominance. And Tom Brady's career is... It's not repeatable.
I completely agree.
So, yeah.
So I have Edelman as a creeper season long, even though he's a good matchup this week.
It's just there's so many weapons where last year there was none. It felt like.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
Chris Hogan's wide receiver one. And wow, then Cordarrelle Patterson's two. Cordarrelle Patterson's running. What? Well, I'm going to go with a guy that, again, season long, he has a pretty decent matchup, I think, next week. Not even my favorite matchup. I think it's actually going to be even more difficult against Arizona next week, and that's Lamar Jackson. Absolutely 100% don't buy into this dude whatsoever. And here's the stat line that proves it. 6 for 6 for 55 yards and a touchdown. That's the stat line that proves that Lamar Jackson's fake, because that's Robert Griffin's stat line when he came into the game after not playing since July with a thumb injury. And he comes in and he plays like an all-pro. It's so fake. It is so fake, it's not even funny. The Dolphins aren't even a team right now. The players don't want to play. Coaches don't even care. They won't admit that they're tanking. But it's so bad. The whole team's asking to be traded. It's a joke of a team. Like, literally, there isn't another team that comes close to the Dolphins situation right now.
Yeah.
It was just everybody was wide open. Because there was no motivation to even play. Dolphins are going to get shredded until something big changes. And have fun with it. If you believe in Lamar Jackson and that's your game that proves it, Robert Griffin, sir, came in there and
was perfect.
So silly. Lamar Jackson is not accurate all of a sudden.
Not to this degree. Like, is this encouraging even though it was a tanking Miami team? I think absolutely it is. I honestly didn't even know he could do that. Even if no one was trying.
Well, it was like backyard football, though. If somebody runs a streak route and you got some rando that's on a corner trying to go, and he runs right by him, and you can throw it deep to him.
It's pretty easy.
Especially when you got somebody like Marquise Brown.
Yeah.
But,
and I mean, the number of throws weren't many, and he was airing it out downfield, and I'd be like, where was any of this? Where was the flash in the pan last year if he was capable of this thing? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, I didn't see it at all.
We never saw the passing.
Correct. Right. That's what I'm referring to, yes. Is that 324 yards and 5 passing touchdowns last year? I didn't know he even had a 3-touchdown game last year. Mm-hmm. I would have to look back and see if that was even the case. So
passing-wise, I'm sure would you add in the rushing touchdowns and stuff.
Exactly. But in this particular game, he rushed it 3 times for 6 yards because there was no need for him to even run at that point in the game. He just completely mowed him over. So that was excellent if you played him in that week. Well done, because I did not have the confidence. But I definitely don't believe until I've seen it at least one more time against not Miami.
Yeah.
And then so I'm 100% as well.
And even Arizona is like, but it's a much tougher matchup.
Yeah, because they were competitive and trying last week. Mm-hmm. We can't say that about Miami.
Right. So.
And I think they're still a run-first team, period, with Mark Ingram, even if he is a better passer than I'm giving him credit for. And then the weapons aren't that complete for him to light it up against tougher talent either.
No.
So he's definitely not matchup-proof. And he's definitely not that good through the
air. So, let's stick with the Ravens. Where do you have Marquise Brown?
I have him also as a creeper.
Right.
Not even because I don't believe in him being the same deep threat receiver that so many of these guys are talking about this week don't fit my general liking pattern. But he only had 5 targets, and that's the difference. With him throwing 324 yards in the game, I mean, yeah, he had almost half of his production, but it was on 4 catches.
Yeah.
That screams fluky to me.
No. It's like... And it wasn't like, oh, wow, nice catch and really shifty and, wow, he made that play. It was like, who's guarding that dude running down the field? Yeah. A referee?
Legit,
like,
wide open.
And touchdown. It was such a bad showing by Miami. It should be embarrassing for everybody involved down there. But
yeah,
5 targets is not going to sustain Marquise Brown season long.
No.
Mark Andrews, Snead caught a touchdown. You're a joke if you think that's legitimate.
Yeah.
That much offense for that team.
I agree. I mean, he had an 85% completion percentage in that game. That is absurd for a guy that literally in a playoff game had 50 passing yards in the third quarter. Get out of here.
Right.
So I'm looking at this guy as a bit of a fluke, although Arizona's secondary is very beat up. So there's a chance you could play Marquise Brown and get one more deep touchdown
right.
this next week. But especially from a season-long standpoint, I am not a believer, and I'm not banking on Lamar Jackson having another three-touchdown day to enable Brown to be a probable touchdown candidate deep down the field.
You could tell me that that was his best passing game of his entire career, and I would believe you.
Going forward.
Somebody comes
if he
back
plays another
2 years.
From the,
yeah, yeah. And somebody comes back, and that was his best game he ever had as a passer. I'd be like, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Because the last time we saw him play through for, like, what, 51 yards?
Yeah, it was awful.
So, in the playoffs?
So, I don't know.
I don't even know the stat, but yeah.
It was rough. So, low targets equals me not a believer. That's pretty much my general thing this early on in the season. It makes me lean toward fluke. Okay. And I hate rookie receivers, too. And it's not because it's their fault. It's just it's a hard position to get good at consistently.
Yeah. It's easy, though, and nobody guards you.
It sure is. Even I could have caught some of those balls. I wouldn't be that open. But I could have caught them if they were laid in there like that.
Oh, who else are you creeping on?
My only last keeper was Larry Fitzgerald, which I kind of alluded to before. Okay. But he's one that isn't a, I don't trust him at all. It's just a, I don't want to get people too ahead of it based on his stat line and his name more than anything else.
Well, yeah, that's a stunner. Do you like Jamison Crowder more than Larry Fitzgerald?
In PPR, yes. In the regular season, for a non-PPR or half PPR, no. I would still go with Larry Fitzgerald just because I think his floor will be higher and the situation's kind of changing. There's more upside with Murray, I think, than Darnold. But I think they're fairly comparable at this point.
Like, I'm going to have to tell you right now, so you can go home and think on it a little bit, is that the Arizona Cardinals are your Christian Yelich. Just undeserved ridicule. I don't know what you're expecting from Kyler Murray in game one of his NFL career, but that's tough.
I'm encouraged. I mean, Kyler Murray looked pretty good, but that level of inconsistency in a game is a little scary. Just a little. I want to see a little more before I'm like, I believe in Larry Fitzgerald to be the sleeper that he showed. And maybe Christian Kirk plays better with a couple more games, and I don't know if he'll outproduce Fitzgerald. I think that's pretty much a far cry, but I don't know.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to stick with my Marquise Brown argument, and it's a guy that we're not playing in fantasy for QBR. We're playing for, you know, volume, points, and Tyler Lockett doesn't fit that. I don't really understand the hype that he got coming into this. I appreciate how efficient they were.
Yeah,
it's not that Tyler Lockett's a fantastic wide receiver, because that same efficiency applied to him and Doug Baldwin. It's whoever's getting the ball from Russell Wilson. He's such a good quarterback.
He is.
I mean, not the flashy of lines, but when it comes to managing a game and being savvy with the ball, he's just good with it.
Creating offense by himself. I don't know if there's a better quarterback than Russell Wilson.
So with that being said, Tyler Lockett, I don't care how efficient they are throwing it. Of course, you're going to be efficient if you get two targets in a game. And that was a great. Of course, the Bengals played a nice, unique defense to suit that, you know, the game strategy, but it's not like this is out of the norm. Tyler Lockett is not a high-target guy, and if he's not a high-target guy, there's going to be so many weeks where you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, when you're looking at 30 yards, no.
So at least he got a touchdown to save his day, but he was two targets, one catch for 44 yards and a touchdown, and just no thanks. No thanks. I think Metcalf is the much more intriguing guy to own on that team.
I just think they're a run-first team, so to me, the receivers are both kind of hard to trust, but your point is valid. I think Lockett's a little overrated as a deep-threat passer, or a deep-threat receiver on a team that doesn't throw that often.
Yeah.
It lowers your chances so much more.
Well, that's it. Yeah. You want to take us into the old so-and-so?
Let's do it. So for this week, we're talking about our fantasy foresight. So we're talking about the players that we believe will play best at certain categories, and we'll get to choose from a list of people, hopefully enlightening you to a little bit more of the who's more valuable, not necessarily on a name standpoint, but on a play this week standpoint. And so first we're going to start with who will have the most passing yards this week? Carson Wentz, Andy Dalton, Matt Ryan, or Lamar Jackson?
Well, I know we're mostly going to say not Lamar Jackson.
fact. If there's one of these that don't belong, one of these is not like the other.
But Lamar I put Jackson. Him in there because he had more passing yards than Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan. So I had, and plus we talked about him. So
and we talked about him, but I it's good to enlighten that we're doubling down and we're saying he's definitely not going to be in this low quarterback one area with all these other guys.
You may say he has less passing yards than all three of those other dudes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to me to see if Lamar Jackson can stay relevant if they shift back to what I do believe he can do, which is run and then pass a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If he can run a lot and pass a little bit and stay healthy, he's a QB1.
Yeah. But his 20 pass attempts that they had in that last game were where they wanted to be.
Yes.
If he ever throws more than 30 times, I think they aren't winning that game.
I would be terrified.
Yeah.
As an odds better, yeah. I'm going to take the loss, the L on overpass or over 30 pass attempts.
So I'm going to go ahead and just go San Francisco. Jameis Winston, A, is bad, but B, San Francisco's pass rush, if you look at that game, looks so improved that they're not the same 49ers from last year by any means. So I think Dalton may have a tough time with that pass rush, although he threw for a nice 418 in that first week. That pass rush looks a little bit more legit in San Francisco, and it did give Arians a tough time with Tampa Bay. So that leaves me with Wentz and Ryan, and I'm actually going to go, I think, with Mr. Matt Ryan.
I'm also going Mr. Matt Ryan. Yeah. It's an interesting question because I don't dislike Carson or Matt in this. Andy's...
I think they're both good plays.
I think they're both good plays, solid plays. I think most people would agree that they're probably the best two. But Andy's interesting. I don't think you'd be a fool to...
Oh, wait, you're going Andy?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm going Matt Ryan.
Okay.
But Andy is a competitive, thoughtful sort of decision there. Mm-hmm. But I think I agree with you. I think with San Francisco embarrassing Jameis Winston that way, it leads me to feel a little less confident. And I would like to see if that offense still functions well with no Mixon threat coming into this next week, or a risk of a Mixon not playing, where they can key on the pass much harder. And I think Dalton might be in for a rough day.
Yeah, I like Ryan at home.
Yeah, and against Philly, they didn't look particularly dominant.
No, Case Keenum had a decent amount of success on the road, so.
Which is what you don't like to see. Right. I thought that was the worst passing offense in the league in Washington coming into the season.
Right.
And
a bunch of rookie wide receivers putting a number on the Eagles early, so.
What was the one guy's name? McLeon or Leod? That's had an incredible
And they had Harmon
touchdowns.
And Quinn. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch, really.
Bravo, Washington, because I had no expectations for you, and you played well. But that's also as much of a detriment on Philly's defense, I think, through the air. So I think Matt Ryan, with the weapons that he has there, I'm feeling more encouraged than Carson Wentz and his weapons.
Right on.
Next, on to who will have the most receiving yards this week. DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Devontae Adams, or DeSean Jackson?
I like this question.
Yeah, this one's a really good question, actually.
I'm going to Sammy Watkins.
See, I went Sammy as well. I mean, it's very close between DeAndre Hopkins. Seeing Sammy Watkins shred Jacksonville gives me hope, and DeAndre Hopkins played awesome against New Orleans last week.
Mm-hmm.
But Jacksonville's defense is clearly better than New Orleans.
Clearly better, and we saw Sammy Watkins perform against Jacksonville with a great game where they already outperformed on yards, and now he's going up against Oakland. Kansas City could... Oakland looked much more improved on defense, but Kansas City could put up so much against Oakland. That
it might be a clear reality check, because Denver's passing offense and Kansas City's are two completely different tiers. We're not even talking about the same sport. It's so much different.
Right.
So I'm with you. Sammy Watkins has the most upside. He'd be the guy I'd choose. Devontae Adams, I think, will be an interesting play, because Minnesota's defense is pretty good, but their primary, I think, is better than their secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be okay. But DeAndre Hopkins I like slightly more, and DeSean Jackson...
I even think he's playable. I know me and you both don't like him. I put him in here so we could mention him, because season-long, I don't think we mentioned him. But against Atlanta, I can see him going, especially early in the season, while his wheels are still feeling young.
And he played very well and was more involved than I thought he would be in Philly's offense, period.
8 of 10 for 154 and 2.
Yeah. So, to me, Atlanta's defense is not scary at all, and DeSean Jackson's coming off a good game. Wentz used him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a deep threat, so he has really high upside. So there's a chance he could lead everyone in receiving yards this week. It's just I don't think he's the safest bet.
Right.
Sammy Watkins, I think he has the highest floor because he's healthy right now in this next week. I think you got to go Sammy against Oakland.
This next question's fun.
Yeah, this one's really interesting. I think we might agree again. We'll see. Most rushing yards this week: Marlon Mack against Tennessee, Sony Michel against Miami, Josh Jacobs against Kansas City, or Chris Carson against Pittsburgh.
I had to think about this one a lot. Yeah, I don't. So let's start with option A: Marlon Mack at Tennessee, most game flow dependent running back with the worst advanced stat breakdown, pretty much in the top five worst last season. 174 yards though last week against the Chargers. It's not going to be repeatable against Tennessee, at Tennessee.
No, not against that defense. They're far better.
Yeah, I think we're going to start highlighting Brissett on the road. Looked very good, very nice first game.
Yeah.
He's a solid above average quarterback. I give him that. But game flow will not be in Marlon Mack's favor at all on this one, although it really wasn't that first game, which really surprised me.
Yeah, he broke some long ones.
But that's the thing.
That's not really his game.
Right.
So maybe you could break another one, right. But Tennessee's going to limit those breakaways way more than other teams would.
So we're saying not A.
I agree.
Then the next one I eliminated was actually Chris Carson.
I did as well.
Okay. Yeah. 3.1 yards per carry against Cincinnati.
He was horrible last year.
What?
We don't even have a linebacker to dress. We were playing two of them. And then you saw Russell Wilson getting obliterated in the pass rush. That shows their offensive line isn't playing nearly as well as it was playing last season to me.
Right.
Partially that's the Bengals defense playing well, but partially it's also that Seattle did not look that good offensively.
No. I couldn't be more discouraged by 3.1 yard per carry total against the Bengals in week one for a run first team, which takes us back to our preview where I said, if you're going to say you're a run first team, you better run well or else Rashad Penny's knocking.
Yeah.
He's knocking and he's more talented. I don't care what people say when it comes to being an athlete. So
he's definitely a guy they expected to start. It's just he got off to a slow start in his career.
And then you hear the reports from Carroll himself being like, I want Penny to be the best back out of all the backs this year. That's his goal. He's smarter, faster, and healthier than ever before. When the coach is saying that, I don't know how Chris Carson isn't offended.
I would be. I'd be like, I played well last year. And he's like, I don't care.
So then the next person I eliminated was Sony Michel. And this may be where we differ.
This is where we differ.
Because he had 15 touches for 14 against Pittsburgh, kind of expected. But why in the world would a guy with knee issues go into Miami, where it's not going to be a game, and get that? He's not going to get that much work. You know, I think Burkhead is a nice, solid play. And I think he's going to steal the carries from Michel
in the whole second half.
Yeah, pretty much.
Garbo time.
You're not going to risk his knee.
You shouldn't, if you're smart.
It's a cakey matchup, for sure. But I think he'll have a nice yards per carry. I just don't think he's going to get the volume, because why in the world would they let Sony Michel be toting the ball 25 times against Miami into the fourth quarter? It doesn't make sense.
No, so, not when Miami's not competitive.
Right. I think Burkhead's going to get another great share, and it just probably isn't going to happen. This game's going to be so over so quick.
That's where I'm at. So I picked Sony Michel against Miami as my play, but it's the way I viewed it was game flow for Josh Jacobs versus Sony Michel possible blowout turning into run. And it's, do you get touchdowns in the first half? And I'm leaning towards Sony Michel will get touchdowns in the first half and have a good yards per carry, because Miami just couldn't stop anybody, including Mark Ingram last week for Baltimore.
And well, this is just rushing yards.
Just rushing yards, that's true. I still think he
I'm going to
doesn't
Jacobs
get game
because,
flowed out.
Because Jacobs can't get game flowed out. Because he, watching that game, we both watched it, which Denver's a much harder team to run against. So he, he is the dude in Oakland, and he looked he looked good. 23 for 85. He only got one target. It's not that he can't get targets. It's that correlation I was talking about in the offseason. If a tight end's going to be heavily targeted like Waller is, the targets are going to slip away from the running back a lot. And I just think he is the dude. I don't think he tops 100, but I think he gets close to 80 again, even against Kansas City. They're going to have to run the ball some. They can't completely abandon it. And every carry goes to Josh Jacobs. For that reason, Kansas City is not good at stopping the run by any means.
No, they're terrible.
So I went with Josh Jacobs. Sony Michel has the best matchup, will be the most efficient, but there's no reason.
Yeah.
He could rush for, 300 yards, sure, but why would you do that?
Yeah,
especially when you want to you know who else is a kind of intriguing play, just thinking about it, is the rookie running back. Get him some carries.
Yeah, that would be a very smart, if you're looking at daily fantasy sort of stuff, because he's going to be a bargain, but I bet you there's a real chance he ends up with two touchdowns for their rookie running back, just because they're getting a playing time and a blowout. That's who's going to get the carries, because it benefits him to get those live game snaps.
Right.
I think that's a very good point. And Michelle is going to be limited by the blowout, I think. I just don't know how early it starts. Is it so bad that they even just get taken out of the game and don't run in the second quarter?
When they make Pittsburgh look that bad, it's going to be early.
I can't even imagine what this Miami game is going to look like. And then sometimes New England doesn't take their foot off the gas pedal and just embarrasses people.
Right.
And they'll throw into the late parts of the game. So it's hard to say. But
we'll see.
I think either one are really close to even.
They're close. That's close to even.
But it's weird because most people might think that they're not that big of a lock from a name standpoint. But if you play the matchups the right way, I think they're much better.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Great podcast. It feels great to be doing Back to Football. I hope you take our advice. It's going to be a good year. And I don't know. Got anything else you want to add before the episode wraps up?
Not too much. Hopefully we'll just keep being able to cover as much as we can from a width standpoint, cast a wide net, and give you some opinions on these players that have changing situations. So hopefully everybody is able to get out there and make some of these acquisitions week one. And to me, don't overweight individual handcuffs on your team. Only weight the handcuffs in ideal run-first situations for very high, awesome picks that have great offensive lines. So to me, this is a great week to start to clean out some of those backup plans for you and get true studs right now.
Yeah. Cool with it. Some people you want to hold on to, though.
Yeah. There's individuals. And I think Malcolm Brown's an example of one of those valuable handcuffs because he actually gets some work right now.
Right.
But people like, I don't know, Jamal Williams, for example, that played pretty well for Green Bay last season, is an interesting handcuff for Aaron Jones because of his injury history last year, and they've split carries in the past. But Jamal Williams' upside right now is so low in comparison to somebody like Aaron Jones that I'd rather go out and get somebody else on the waiver wire that's going to help my team out more. Because the Packers' run game isn't a guaranteed lock, even if he takes over.
Sure. All right, guys. Keep listening to us. Tell other people to listen about it. We appreciate that. You can follow us. Do all those great things. We hope to help you out. So, peace out.
Good luck.